So, how did your second week of 31 Days of Kindness go? They got a few more woohoos this year, this week, and last week. All right, so what we're working on is we're just seeking to be intentional about being kind to people. One of the men in our men's Bible study on Thursday night or Wednesday night said that he was his wife was concerned about him because he was home an hour later than he was supposed to be. And the reason why is because he was at Walmart helping people. If you want to go help somebody and express some kindness, all you got to do is go to Walmart. Okay? Plenty of people need help there. All right? One of the ones I got from somebody was there was somebody who was short. Imagine that. And they needed something on a top shelf. And they were taller than that person, so they were able to get that thing for that person. All right, so if you see me at Walmart, you'll know, get that thing up there for me, okay? Kindness. Be intentional about kindness, what God has for us. Now, we learned something last Sunday night at the youth Christmas banquet that we talked about in the morning, but they amplified it in the afternoon, and I hadn't heard the rest of this. You'll remember years ago I introduced you to the phrase, your will, nothing more, nothing less, nothing else, right? And we put Jesus in there. Jesus, nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. I heard the rest of it when Forrest Ryle spoke to us the other night. It goes like this. Lord, your will in my life, nothing more, you can help me out, nothing less, nothing else. Then it goes on to say this. But your will in my life. Hadn't heard the whole of that, but I think I can get the rest of it. You probably even can read it with me. Lord, your will in my life, nothing more, nothing less, nothing else, but your will in my life. Amen. Oh, I was really glad that I was at that banquet to be able to learn the rest of it as we've used it through the years, and we had even given it Sunday morning. And when he started saying that, we all go, we just said that this morning. We said, Jesus, nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. That's what we want in our life, right? So, as we kind of review, the Lord is intentional with his generosity toward us. We talked about the first sermon, we talked about Thanksgiving leads to generosity. As we are thankful, we'll be generous with what God has given to us, what others have shared with us. We'll find that much easier to do. Last Sunday, we talked about living generously, that our lives would communicate generosity to people. We talked about Elizabeth and Mary. We talked about, yes, they were the parents, the moms of John the Baptist and Jesus, miracle babies. Okay? We talked about that, but even more, maybe, we should also remember this. That the reason that they were moms of those miracle babies is because they were righteous ladies. That they were walking blamelessly, as it says of Elizabeth. They're walking blamely in the instructions and statutes of the Lord. That's why God chose them. To be able to do what he called them to be able to do. And then they both said, basically, Lord, I am your servant. May it be to me as you have instructed me, as you've given to me. I will do what you ask me to be able to do. We said this, what do you want to be remembered for? We remember them for birthing John the Baptist and Jesus. But we remember them for living a righteous life. Not perfect, of course, but living a righteous life. Pursuing with passion this walk with the Lord Almighty. We said this. What you do today will be what you'll be remembered for tomorrow. What you do today will be what you'll be remembered for tomorrow. So give out those acts of kindness. That will characterize your life as it did for Mary and Elizabeth. Today we're going to talk about giving generously, talking about the wise men. I read this a couple of weeks ago that the spirit of Christmas is joyful giving. That should be the spirit of it. For us to be able to do that. So let me start off with just a few little introductory thoughts about life, finances, and giving. The first is this. We need to remember this, that everything we have was given to us by the Lord. Everything we have was given to us by the Lord. And in that, I'll finish with that, finish with this, but we are blessed to bless others. Not to hoard it, but we are blessed with what God has given to us. We are blessed to be able to bless others. Secondly, this, we need to recognize that we are rich compared to the rest of the world. Now, you may not be rich, but you are rich compared to the rest of the world. I am rich compared to the rest of the world. We have so much more. I think about that when I eat my Frosted Flakes in the morning. It's really a nutritious cereal, I'm sure. And I think about the few flakes. You try saying it, okay? I think about the few flakes that I leave in there. But somewhere in the world, some kids give anything to have the little bit that I don't eat. Because they don't have what we have. Third thing, we always gain when we are generous. We always gain when we are generous. So give it all you got. 2 Corinthians 9:6. It's up there. We used it last week. So we sow sparingly, we will reap. And when we sow bountifully, we will reap. It's a promise. It's also just an axiom of life. So, give with a what? Dump truck. Don't give with a teaspoon. That's the measure you're going to be back. Get back. Luke 6:38. Give big, not little. Because that's the measure you're going to... That's Jesus' promise. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you, he says. Give and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Give with a dump truck. Give big. One of my favorite plays and dramas is Fiddler on the Roof. If I were a rich man, yaddy-daddy-daddy-daddy-daddy-daddy-daddy-doo, all day long I'd fiddle-fiddle-boom, if I were a richest man. Hey! Okay. I remember seeing that in high school. I hadn't gone to any plays. I was dating a girl. We went to her school to see this. And I was blown away how good high schoolers were to do something like this. I mean, they were professionals. You know, they were... Anyway. So, his son, soon-to-be son-in-law, Perchik, I don't know how you say it, but Perchik says, and he's a part of the Russian Revolution, communists, and they would say something like this, right? Money is the world's curse. And Tevye says, may the Lord smite me with it, and may I never recover. I'm telling you, that's not biblical. Money is not the world's curse. Because it says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, it says, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. Not money. Not money. But the love of it is. So that's not true. Money isn't the world's curse. But maybe you would like to be smitten with it, right? Go ahead, Lord. And God does. There are some that he gives lots to. And you know what they're supposed to do with it? Uh-huh. You're blessed to be a blessing to others with what we have. Let me do that. Giving is easier when you live on a budget and spend less than you earn. Duh. Giving is easier when you live on a budget and you spend less than you earn. You've probably discovered that before. We talk about time, talents, and treasures. It's kind of three phrases we put together when we talk about giving and money and giving things away. Let's read Matthew chapter 2, the story the event of the wise men. Matthew chapter 2. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw a star when it rose, and we've come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And he assembled all the chief priests and the scribes of the people. He inquired of them when the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet," prophet being Micah, "and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for whom you shall come, from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him." Lie. After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Talk about their treasures. You know this, you've read it, you've heard, but just to remind you, the wise men are known and remembered for their, what? Their gifts, what they gave. What did they give? Gold and myrrh. You got it. It seems to me that by what they gave, they had much to give. Myrrh, frankincense, and gold. I know all of you probably have some gold on you today, of course, right? Probably you don't even have any gold, right? Maybe you have some other things. But the fact is, I think by what they gave, it tells us that they had much to give and to share with them. And they gave those gifts to honor Jesus. They came to worship, but they gave those gifts to worship or honor him. And I think, even as I think Ms. Bailey alluded to it, I think that they weren't just kind of looking through their stuff when they're getting ready to leave. Let's see, what do I got in this cabinet? Oh, what do I got over here? No. I think that God told them to take those gifts. Why? Well, because they foreshadow who he is, right? Gold for royalty, the king, right? Who he is. King of kings, the Lord of lords, King of kings, the Lord of lords, and he shall reign forever and ever. Handel's Messiah. Good thing to listen to during the Christmas time. The frankincense, the incense that was burned by the priests as they worshipped him, as they offered their gifts, their offerings. The smell, the sweet aroma from Ephesians chapter 5, verse 2, as Mrs. Bailey read. His deity. He's the great high priest, the one who intercedes between us and God. And we go through him. We don't need anybody else to help us get to God. He's given us permission to go to him directly as it is, to approach the throne of grace with confidence, Ephesians chapter 4, or Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15 and 16. And then the myrrh. In the first service, Mrs. Bailey went, "Myrrh." That's why I said that earlier. She didn't do it here. She didn't make you laugh like she did in the first service. But myrrh. The myrrh, as was indicated, the embalming, the spices that they would put around a body in after death. And it represents the Savior, what Jesus is going to do for us. And we are so glad he did that for us. Amen. They foreshadow who the Messiah is, King, Priest, and also Savior for us. They also, as we know, I think, doesn't say, but I think you can understand, I think it helped finance Joseph and Mary's trip to Egypt. When, as Rich Mullins sang many years ago, a great song, "The Deliverer is Coming," when they escaped the rage of a deadly king. We read that further in Matthew chapter 2. You know that story. As we think about giving, I remind you this. Statistics tell us this about giving. Those that make the least give the most. When it comes to giving to the Lord's work, those that make the least give the most to God's work by percentage. Not necessarily numerically, but by percentage. I've heard that stat. I've read that stat. It's a true stat. Even this week, I read an article out of Baptist Press. It was a survey done by the American Bible Society. Let me read some of it to you. Bible-engaged Christians are the most charitable people in the nation, and giving increases happiness among the generous. Here's a quote. People who consistently read the Bible and live by its teachings are more likely to give to charity. Our data shows that they also give far more, not only to churches, but also to religious and non-religious charities. Going on. But while evangelicals, that's us who believe the gospel truth, give more as a dollar amount, only the lowest income earners give at least 10% of their income to charity. Going on. Our survey shows that donors at the lowest income levels give the greatest percentage of their income to church or charity. Families earning under $20,000 a year give as much as 11% of their income to charity. But giving largely decreases as income increases, dropping to 5.4% for families that earn just under $50,000. Giving rises as high as 8.5% for income for families earning between $50,000 and $100,000, but drops to the lowest proportion of 2.9% for those who earn between $100,000 and $150,000. Those are true stats done by the American Bible Society. Those who give the least, by percentage, give the most. And where you fit in there, but I hope that you're better than the 2.9 of those that make lots of money. Jesus illustrated that by when the lady came to the temple and she gave her two coins. And the rich man came and gave bags, right? But that was only a little bit of what they had. And that's what happens. As people have more, they give less because, well, probably they have more expenses. It costs a lot more to drive that new car than it does the beater. Or at least you hope so, right? May I encourage you, be a generous giver. Just like they were. I think they probably gave from their surplus, the wise men. But still, they were very generous in what they give. And I encourage you to that. Be generous as you think about what God has given to you. Bless you. I heard Beth Moore this week in a little vignette that they play. I don't know which radio station it was, K102 or 106.9. But she illustrated it really well. She was talking about having a Christmas with her grandkids and her kids. And it was one of those Christmases where, you know, the kids got 14 presents. That'll probably happen to you this year, right? They got lots of presents. And they just kind of watched their kids. And the kids, basically, they had a hard time knowing which one to play with. Because they got so many. They opened one and, oh, that's cool. And then they opened another one. Oh, that one's better than this. You know, that type of thing. It's probably happened to you, maybe, your family. But she said, one year we decided, we're just going to, this isn't their exact words, but it was something like this. We're just going to, I got to read them. I can't even remember the five things. Spend small so you can celebrate big. She said, when we concentrated and only gave them like, you know, a few gifts, it was a much better Christmas. Because they'd open it, that was what they got, and they played with that. She just said something like this. Spend, bless you too. Spend small so you celebrate big. Might try it. I know this. There's a lot less clutter if you buy less presents. Not a great time to be a garbage man, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way, but those people who serve us as trash men. Fortunately, wrapping paper doesn't weigh too much, doesn't take up too much room. But think about all that goes into that. Spend small so you can celebrate big. Okay, that's their treasures. Cover a little bit about that. Let's talk about their time just a little bit here. It seems to me that the wise men had much to give by what they gave up. With the treasures, they said, I think they had much to give by what they gave. Here I'm saying, they had much to give by what they gave up. Think about their travels from Babylon to Jerusalem. 900 miles. Remember we were studying the book of Ezra and when they came back, the times that they came back. We said basically probably about 900 miles or so. It's a long ways. A couple hours in an airplane. It's a long ways to hoof it on a camel, donkey, whatever they came. How did they know about Jesus? Well, is it quite possible that when Israel's in captivity in Babylon, that they just happened to talk about the prophecies? They knew about it? We don't know that, but certainly could be. They learned it there. And then when God put a star there, they knew it was something special, that they were to come and worship the King of the Jews. They were obedient in some way. When they saw the star, they were obedient to God's direction in their lives. Not only was it a long distance, it was a long time. 50 to 60 days, some authors say, says, if it's that far, if it's 900 miles. Think about what they gave up to leave their families, to leave their friends, to leave their job, whatever it is they do. They showed that they had a lot to give by what they gave up in their own lives. And I think this comes down to this. They were intentional in wanting to find Jesus. Maybe go 900 miles, 50, 60 days, and you come to Judah, Jerusalem, and then you go and you talk around town, as it says in verse 2. Where is this King of the Jews? Where is he? We've come looking for him. We've come to worship him. And then King Herod, a madman, gets word about all this, and he tells that little lie about, you know, find him for me too, because I want to go worship him. We know that wasn't true. But even in that, they spoke the truth in some way, because he says later, I want to worship him. How did Herod know they've come to worship him? Because I think they told him, we've come to worship him. They were intentional in trying to find the King of the Jews as they knew him at that time, and Jesus as we knew him. How about you? Are you doing the same? Am I doing the same? Am I intentional in seeking to pursue Jesus like the wise men did? And I hope you are. And especially during this time. It's time that we do focus on Jesus. It should be more forefront in our minds than at any other time to be intentionally pursuing him with our time. One author has said this, if you don't prioritize your life, you could put time in there. If you don't prioritize your time or your life, someone else will do it for you. You know that. I read just a few weeks ago, the average person spends 3 hours a day on screen time. Now, I don't know if you're the average person or not, but that's what they come up with. And they say this of students. I'll direct it to you guys. 6 hours a day in screen time. What do you think? Cameron says more. He's an honest guy, right? That's a lot of time, and you say you don't have time for Jesus? You don't have time for the Word? Of course you do. So do I. You know, I'll sit down and watch a Broncos game for 3 hours today. Well, no, I won't, because I got to go to a choir concert for my kids, my grandkids, and so I'm going to have to record it, so it'll only take about an hour and a half. Right? What do you mean I don't have time for Jesus? I don't have time for his word. You have time. If you don't prioritize it, someone else will, and your screen will for us. Time is so easy to waste. Oh, my goodness. I've been thinking about that all week while I've been wasting time. It's just so easy to waste. Ephesians chapter 5. Again, you know this. Paul says this. Look carefully how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise. Making the best use of your time. Other versions say, redeeming the time. Using it the best way. Because the days are evil. Well, we know that. Therefore, don't be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Well, where are you going to find out where the will of the Lord is? It's given it right here. It's right here for us. Got to make time for it. You'll understand His will and you'll be considered wise like the wise men were. How about if you're going on vacation over this next few weeks? Make time for the Lord on Sunday. Put it into your schedule that you'll stop and go to a church. You got time. Just a matter of planning for it. Bless that group, that congregation, by your being there. Honor the Lord. It's His time. You got time. I got time. That's the case. How about you know this verse? For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me and I'll hear you. You will seek and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Jeremiah chapter 29, 11 and 12. Seek Him with all your heart. And you know what? You'll find Him. Like the wise men found Jesus because they sought Him with everything they had. They chose to pursue Him. Everything they had. Even when they got to Jerusalem, we want to know where He is. We know He's not here yet. And then they told Him, He's over here. He's in Bethlehem. Where'd they go? They went and they pursued Him. And that's what He calls us to do. Now, I understand. The wise men had supernatural guidance. It's called GPS. God's provided star. A couple years ago, I don't know what I labeled it, but this year it's God provided star. Okay? They had GPS. And it took them to where Jesus was. In the house. The infant Jesus. Do you know how hard it is to find a picture of the wise men going to a house? I couldn't find one, hardly. That one's kind of a stable house. I mean, He went to a house. It says that. And the child, it says that. But you can't find a picture of that because everybody's got him at the manger. He didn't meet him at the manger. It says right here. He met him at a house and they found the child there. But with that, the wise men were wise men who followed wise guidance from a wise God. The wise men were wise men because they followed the wise guidance from a wise God. I thought that was pretty good, right? That's what they did. God gave them the guidance, and they stuck to it because they wanted to find Jesus. How about you? How about me? Would we be considered wise? Because we're following the guidance that God has given to us? It's supernatural, too. It's inspired by God, and it's profitable for teaching, correction, reproof, and instruction in righteousness, so the man of God may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. 2 Timothy chapter 3, 15, 16, 17. What about your time and your serve? Are you given what you should give? It's not a substitute for financial giving, but it is what God has given to us, to use our time and our treasures for Him. Okay, let me do some practical application. First of all, the wise men came prepared with their gifts. Again, I believe God showed them, shared with them, this would be a good gift to give. They didn't understand probably all of that, the ramifications of it, the foreshadowing. But I think God put in their minds what they were to take. And that shows for us the foreshadowing. How are you preparing for your giving? How do you prepare for your giving? I hope it's at the first of the month. Many of you do because that's the highest offerings we have. Because you say, this is the first thing I want to do. I want to make sure that I give to the Lord first and how He has blessed me so I can bless others. Just the other night, Alicia and I went through our giving for this year because I wanted to see where we had given, but I also wanted to see who have I missed. We support a number of missionaries every month beyond our bigger than tithe here at the church. I'll just share that with you. And we want to make sure that we took care of those people that we've made a commitment to. And so we wrote out a number of checks, did a lot of online giving to be able to take care of those people we hadn't got to yet this year. Because we get to be a part of their lives. Man, it's a privilege. I pray for them every week, all those people. 1 Corinthians 16 tells us, now concerning the collection for the saints, as he's writing to the Corinthians, the collection was for the Jewish people in Jerusalem who had gone through a difficult time. He says, as I directed the churches in Galatia, so you're to do. On the first day of the week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so that there'll be no collection when I come. I encourage you. Maybe even give something every week. A little. I mean, just even if you put a dollar in, you would be saying to God, hey, what I have is yours. What I have is yours. Versus even in adding to whatever you do in your tithes and your offerings. They gave their gifts personally. They didn't take advantage of free shipping with Amazon. They came. Oh, they could have. They could have got to Jerusalem and said, hey, these gifts are for the Christ child. Will somebody take them? They could have done that. No, they wanted to find Jesus and they wanted to give their gifts personally. The value, the importance of us being a part of each other's lives. Their presence, CE, was just as important as their presence, TS. Again, came across an article, talked about that this week in Baptist Press. There are many words that can be used to describe God: holy, just, righteous, merciful, sovereign, gentle. I'm sure you can think of many more. One of my favorite adjectives for the Father is gracious. Our God is no Scrooge when it comes to sharing what is His with those He loves. He's a giving God. His kindness overflows with great abundance. Whenever I give what I consider to be gracious to someone, He always gives more. The best gift that will be given this Christmas is the gift of God Himself, or as the song goes, the best gift of all is Jesus. As you seek God's hand of blessing, seek God's face. As you enjoy His grace-filled presence, TS, recognize that it is His holy presence, CE, that brings salvation, support, strength, and security. Third, they obeyed the Lord's instructions in coming to and departing from Jesus. Somehow that star was special, and that it was an invitation. It was an invitation from the Lord Almighty to leave their home and to find Jesus. I'm thinking of this yesterday and today. What happened to the star when they got to Herod? Now think about it. If the star guided them, and he ascertained when the star came about, we know that because of the sacrifice of lives, 2 years and younger, further in the study that he took. But what happened to the star when they got to Jerusalem? How come Herod couldn't see that star? And how come he couldn't follow them to Bethlehem? You ever thought about that? Me neither. If the star had been still going and they identified it and they followed it, why didn't he follow him there? I don't know. And what happened to the star when they left and they went a different way? Because they weren't going to do what Herod said to do. What happened to the star? If the star had been going, Herod could have followed them and he'd have slaughtered them too. Because they didn't do what he said. I don't know. I'm doing a little surmising. They're just wondering, where did the star go in those times? I think God just went. Okay. They know how to get back to Babylon. Right? They know how to get back there. They know the road, Interstate 70 to Interstate 80, you know. They knew that. But somehow, I don't know, but it just seems like God shut the star off so that Herod wouldn't know that they're leaving. Or maybe the star just, but I don't know. These are questions I ask. Okay. Fourth, they came to do more than honor Jesus. They came to worship Him. More than giving their gifts, just to honor Him. Nice guy, cute little child, da-da-da-da, Mary and Joseph. No, they came to worship Him. And it says, when they came and going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped Him. Then they opened up their gifts. Beautiful. Thank you, Lord, that we get to worship You. So, let's wrap it up here. What will you give today or tomorrow? Let me ask you this. What's your Jesus gift this year? What's your Jesus gift? Going to give to other people, but it is his birthday as we look at it. What are you going to give to him to say, I worship you, I love you? How are you doing with your Christmas spending? I'm going to step on a few toes here. Are you going to be happy when the bills come in January? I know how to make that happen. Spend small so you can celebrate big. We have our budget in the bulletin. I'm not going to go over line item by line, but you can see it's significant. It's what it takes to run what we do here. It's more than last year because everything costs more this year. Thank you for your faithful giving to make that possible. We're over budget in giving. I thank you for that. But I encourage all of you to participate. I'd love for you to be a tither, to give 10%, and then more. You don't have to stop right there. But it's a good place to be. And if you're not there, keep working toward it. Trust God. Trust God to keep adding to that. And as a staff member, thank you for your giving to the Lord through Majestic. That's how I've lived for 43, 44 years in ministry. Not all those here, of course. 5 churches I've been involved in. But thank you. Thank you for providing for me and my family through the years. I'm very, very grateful for that. Pastor Elisha and Nicole, Kay, and Renee are all part of our staff, some in part-time. But thank you for how you provide for us. We're grateful for that. We support a number of missionaries through our giving. Over 2,000 Southern Baptist North American Mission, over 3,600 Southern Baptist International Missionaries, and we support about 30, 35 other organizations that those people have to raise their own support. Your giving supports those ministries. Thank you for that. Most of those people that raise their own support, I know very few people that are ever at 100% who get full support. But they go and they serve because you give. And thank you for being a part of that, what we can do at Majestic. About 23% of what's in our budget goes toward missions. It's exciting to be a part of that. Just so you know this, fun fact, a little know and tell. I did what our November giving was. 32% of our giving in November was online. But you can give online. You can give in person here through the baskets at the back, and you can give through bank drafts. You can give that way. But you can give online too, and pretty significant. 32% of you give, or at least in November, give online. Thank you. That works for you. We appreciate that very, very much. 176 Operation Christmas Child shoeboxes. Yeah! Good job! All across the world, right? 176 families are going to get the gospel in that box. Thank you for your giving toward that. I know it costs a little bit to fill those boxes up. I'm gonna bring this up. In your giving, do you give when you get a bonus? Do you give when you get an extra gift? Do you give maybe from your investments? Do you give when you would redeem a life insurance policy? Do you give when you get an inheritance gift? I know I might be stepping on toes, but I'm just telling you, I think those are places to give from. When Alicia's father passed away about a year ago, we did get some inheritance, and we've been given every month to be able to at least tithe off that, or even greater, because it's a gift. God gave it to us. We didn't earn it. We didn't deserve it. He's very kind to give it, but God gave her dad that inheritance, that money, and we got a portion of it. And we've been really hard. We're working really hard to honor God and to give from that because God gave it to us, and we're thankful for it. We're going to have a seminar coming up in the beginning of the year sometime, a deal called basically how to budget so you can pay off your mortgage in 5 to 7 years. We've done it before. We've brought Bob Moret a couple times, but we're going to be doing something like that in the first of the year. That might be of interest to you. I know some really good gifts you could give somebody. It's right there on your card, or right there on your chair. It is a card on your chair. I encourage you. This might be the best gift you could give anybody. Invite them to come. Got plenty of them? Take as many as you need. Somebody asked for 3 or 4 more this week, and Jerry asked for more last week. Jerry, we got them on the card for you. Got them on the chairs for you today. Got them out there. How about coming to Sunday school? Man, that'd be a great gift. We'd love to have you in our Sunday school classes. That's some really, really good classes. Even today, first service, somebody got asked to go to a Sunday school class. Saw they hadn't gone. They just asked them to go. And they went. That person went this morning. How about some attention, time to some people that need it in your lives? And how about, let's see, Ephesians 4:32. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, always forgiving one another, even as Christ has forgiven you. That could be the best gift ever. We've all got relationships that are difficult to forgive, to work on making it right, to reconcile that relationship. Maybe to a letter or phone call. That's been kind of mine this past few weeks, is mainly phone calls to people that need a little bit of encouragement. That can go a long ways. Okay, I'll finish out with this. Gary Hogue is my friend up in Denver, goes all across the world, as I've told you, and he's called the Generosity Monk, because that's what he works on, helping people to be generous with what God's given them. He wrote this just a few days ago. Our Father in Heaven stands ever ready and eager to give us good gifts. And these gifts are not for us alone, but for all those with whom we serve. And He loves it when we ask for and make gifts to others, demonstrating His generosity to us. So I said this earlier. We are blessed by God so we can be a blessing to others. Many of you know that. You've been doing it all your life. You've been blessed by God with what He's given you, maybe a little, maybe a lot. But you've used that to bless others. That's what we're to do. That's a good steward. The wise men did. By what they gave, we know that they probably had a lot to give, but we also know that they gave up a lot to be able to make that trip to be here. So I encourage you. God loves a cheerful giver. 2 Corinthians 8. So give it all you got. Give it all you got. And honor Him with what the Lord has provided.